Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show. Today, you're going to get a chance to hear from Maricela Soberanes. Maricela joined us back in July of 22. And this republishing of that episode, which was called From Scarcity to Abundance Through Real Estate with millionaire immigrant, veteran, and author Maricela Soberanes, is just phenomenal. Her story is incredible. She wrote a book about scarcity versus abundance. And Maricela came to the U.S. not knowing English, not knowing anyone, and not having any money. She went to nursing school. She joined the U.S. military, and she is on a path to create and distribute generational wealth through real estate. It's absolutely phenomenal. She talks a lot about masterminds, the power of mindset, and surrounding yourself with people who challenge you, and two factors that differentiate people who live in scarcity from those who live in abundance. So she is the absolute perfect guest for our podcast. And there's a reason we featured her in our book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, which you can grab on Amazon. Maricela is the perfect case study for us to learn from with regard to overcoming adversity and getting to abundance. You're gonna enjoy this one for sure.
Welcome to the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. Are you an entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur? Then this show is for you. Each week, we bring you impactful stories of real people who have overcome painful human adversity to create a life of abundance. A life of abundance. You are not alone in your struggle. Join us, and you will experience the power of true stories and gain practical knowledge from founders who have turned poverty into prosperity and weakness into wealth. This podcast will encourage you through your health, relationship, and financial challenges so you can become the hero in your quest for freedom. Take ownership of the life you are destined to live. Turn your adversity into abundance.
And I'm very excited today. We have a special guest, Maricela Soberanes. That's my best attempt, at least at my best first attempt. Maricela, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. And you did just right.
Perfect. And your company name, just so we get it out there, you want to say your company name for us?
It's Uplex. That's our brand.
Perfect. So I didn't, before we get into kind of your current context of who you are today, I didn't tell you this before we hit record, but I actually came across your name from, I was Googling authors, and with something related to my podcast name. So I think I Googled Adversity to Abundance books, and the name of your book came up, From Scarcity to Abundance. And so then I started, you know, digging a little bit deeper, and I was like, she would make a fantastic guest.
And then also another thing is, I know you were in the military. I was as well. And so I said, I definitely need to get her on the show. So didn't tell you that before we hit record, but that's how I found you and tracked you down. And I appreciate you spending your time with us because I know it is valuable. If you could tell our listeners what you're up to today and give us a little context of your real estate business and everything else you have going on right now.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. That's incredible. You know, there's little things that just kind of sometimes they happen in life and you don't even realize that. So thanks for sharing how you yep. link with us and with me. But so currently what we do is my husband and I, we are into apartment syndications. So we purchase large apartment complexes and we find partners and find investors. And altogether, the goal is to, you know, do make the projections, reach projections, and then sell the apartment. In the meantime, we also better communities and impact larger than what we were doing before, which was small multifamily houses, duplexes. Mm-hmm. So okay. Currently, we also do mobile home parks and self-storages. So that the diversification on that aspect. But majority of focus is apartment syndications.
Okay. So could you put a little bit more context to it as far as some numbers or, you know, you don't have to get too detailed if you don't want to, but as far as, you know, how many deals have you done or what does your business look like today?
Yes, of course. So we have passively, but I still invest in passively and every deal we invest and that we offer to our investors, we invest passively with them. But we are now transitioned to active. So there's a role that we play as a active member. So passively, we are invested in 1,250 apartments in five different states. And actively, we have about 1,200 apartments. And that's a total of four deals where we have we are primary partners. And that's also, that's in three states. So a total of 2,500 apartments across five
different states. So the three states are part of the five states.
yes.
Got it. That's a lot. Wow. You're definitely busy. So how long have you been doing that for?
So we started with single families in 2006, and we transitioned to apartments 19 months ago.
Got it. Okay. And then you've more recently diversified a little bit into self-storage and mobile home parks, right? You said?
Yes, we added those as part of the, we call it the generational wealth type of assets that okay. we are not, it's usually a partnership. And we are holding those assets for generations to come.
Yeah. So quick, before we dive into your backstory. So on the active side, you're more of the GP. Is that how it?
Yes.
Okay. And then you bring on limited partners and you're the general partner playing the active role of putting the deals together, managing the assets, adding value, adding, you know, to the NOI, which adds to the investment value, the actual value of the asset, and then you can exit for a profit, hopefully, for you and your limited partners. Is that fair to say?
That is fair. I didn't know how deep that I could go.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Yes. And you know, some of our listeners can talk circles around me as far as a multifamily. It's not my wheelhouse, but I'm generally aware of how that works. You're not running, you know, I'm more in the single family space where the value of the asset is really based more on the comps and what the neighbors sold their house for. It's more difficult for me to add value to that asset than it is, well, at least directly influence the value of the asset itself than it is in the larger commercial or multifamily space.
That's a really good point, because when we look at the apartments, it's actually we buy businesses. We buy the business. We better the, like you said, the NOI, which is the all expenses, all the income minus all the expenses, and that's mm-hmm. your profit. or we acquire them, we're looking to develop a business plan so that we can improve the NOI, which is the is going to then decide or impact the value. So mm-hmm. we do things like we go in there and we change the 200 toilets and head showers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some people might ask, why do you do that, right? Because with every flush, we're going to save water, you know. And it also gives us the opportunity to go in every single apartment, not only to change the toilet, because when you are there, the residents will say, hey, by the way, this is also bothering me. So, and they see the impact right away, what we can do. And all of that is planned. And all of that also results in happy residents that stay longer, mm-hmm. less mm-hmm. turnover. And it was all because we wanted to also decrease the water usage. And sure. and their lives, you know, the way they live there, they're more comfortable. They feel like you did pay attention, you know, the new owner changed this or did this mm-hmm. for us. So along the way, we impact communities. So yeah. when you got to single families, which we had yeah. at 35 doors, we could only, you know, help 35 families.
It's so, a more limited impact, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so, I mean, it's unfortunately in the media today, and we get such a, you know, the divide between landlords and tenants is so, I'm not saying it doesn't exist anywhere, but it's refreshing to hear from someone who actually wants to make a positive impact and make some money along the way and help, you know, leave a positive influence, you know, in your wake, and also make money for your investors. And I mean, that should be the goal, in my opinion, is why can't it be a win-win-win? So that's really good. I'm glad to hear. And I don't think we mentioned, but you're in the Austin, Texas area. Is that right?
Yeah, we're based in Austin, and yeah, we invest in Austin, Houston, and Dallas, and then outside of of Texas.
Is it mostly, what other states are you in, if you don't mind?
No. So mostly the states, the way we picked is that they are small business friendly, and mm-hmm. and that's mainly the taxes are not too crazy. The regulations are not too out of, you know,
yeah.
California, New York, and right. Seattle.
So you're more in the South and
yeah,
Florida, Georgia. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, right.
Got it. Okay. All right. No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, you definitely have been in the real estate investment game for quite some time. And I think diversifying at this point makes a good bit of sense as well. So that's really good. So more to the human side of things, from scarcity to abundance. And I see you do have another book as well, Real Estate Investing Made Simple. But from scarcity to abundance, that's your new book, or the more recent book. Can you tell us kind of what led to that? And you can pick it up where you'd like to from your own, whether it's childhood or wherever you'd like to, but we want to walk through kind of your backstory and discuss some of the adversity, the personal adversity or business related challenges that you've been through. And, that's hopefully you can be an inspiration for the listeners. So yeah, tell us more about the book and your background.
Yeah. So the book actually is my bright background. It is actually the stories that I grew up in Mexico. I was born and raised there. And at age 5, my mom moved us as a family to the city from it was a small little town, very little town. And my grandma stayed there. The rest of the family stayed there. And so along the years, every summer, my mom will bring us back to visit grandma. But, we grew up very, very poor. Coming or traveling as a family back to my grandma, it was a sacrifice that we all have to make and be conscious about, saving and, just optimizing our resources to be able to afford to go back. And it wasn't a luxury trip by any means. But that was the way that we grew up. But you know, I wrote the book to share that those memories with the generations that will be here. And my grandma passed, my mom passed, and you know what's coming for me, right? That's what's coming for me. So I want to write her legacy and share those stories. But I also wanted to make it, the lessons that I learned are lessons that I continue to apply, and I have during my entire life to get to where I am. Visualization, affirmations, abundance, thinking larger. So that's the why I wrote this book.
So now let's and I end up saying this on a lot of episodes. The point is not to bring back terrible memories or to, you know, make anyone cry, although that actually did just happen last week on an episode. But, you know, and I'm certainly not therapy or anything like that. But if you could you dive into a little more specifics as far as the adversity you've faced? And poverty right there is a big one, obviously. Either be more specific about the poverty or were there other types of challenges that you faced growing up?
Mostly the not having enough to sustain as a family. You know, my mom, it was about eight of us, and she actually went in the small little town. She was the midwife for the community. And when we moved to the city, there's hospital. So she immediately lost not only friends, her community, but also the ability to make money or transactions that will help her, you know, take care of the family. She actually didn't know how to read or write because that was just in that area. So you can only imagine how difficult it was for her to overcome. But she always made sure that she provided in the house, there was the love, there was the family, the community. And that was, that's why she made the effort to bring us back to where we could see that, where it doesn't have or not, that she can see that it was a community that helped each other. I can tell you other than, you know, what I saw outside of the house, people had other things, and that's how I knew that, oh, okay, we just don't have that. But it doesn't, it wasn't like a misery. It wasn't like a comparison of, like, you know, when I wrote the book, I was trying to write in a way that it didn't sound, like you said, a sob story. I can talk about, you know, sadness, but in reality, it really was abundance. Now I can tell you, when I moved to the States at age 23, and I arrived here, I didn't speak the language. I didn't speak any English. I didn't know anyone, and I had $100 in my pocket.
That's a lot of challenges right there. That's a lot.
I didn't have my community anymore. I didn't have my mom. I think that is even a bigger obstacle, you know. But I was, just the fact that I woke up the next day and I was in America, I'm like, my eyes were, I'm like, I can't believe I'm here.
So, I mean, I was talking the other day about how I switched schools in the middle of sixth grade and how that was challenging. So, you know, compared to what you went through at 23, I don't think switching middle schools is all that challenging, So what led up to the you know, to before you were 23, or how, what led up, what was the context to you coming to America?
So my first degree was a business degree in Mexico, and I was practicing, and the company that we did a lot of business with was from the States. So every time I get to answer the phone, it was in English. So I was doing my job well, but in Spanish. And then every time I have a call from the States, I'm like, just a moment. That's all. So I'm very frustrated. And there was a couple of people. One was the owner and another executive that was fluent at English. And that's where the calls went to. And I'm like, Well, I would like to help them. I would like to see, but yeah, I can't
You felt like you weren't doing your job as well as you could have. And so that was really the impetus so it was all about learning the language.
Yes, that's okay. I want to go and see what it feels like just to be in a place where you can't understand and learn. So I put myself through school, and my first classes were the English as a second language, and then I'm going.
Okay. So you said you put yourself through school. What did that look like? Were you working at the same time, I guess?
Yes. I have to be able to provide, because again, I have to pay for school, pay for all my expenses. And I was working while I was going to school. I actually went to nursing school and I kept going. I went to anesthesia school. I graduated. After that, I entered the military. I think that was another phase that was a little challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So what led you to the military? How did that transition go?
I have finished my doctorate. Then I have, I just feel like I have so much. I have that America has given me so many opportunities. At that point, I was I had a couple of investments. I just felt like I was living the dream. Like there's no other, man. Mm. I was like that. It was a time for me to give back and join the military. I was in school and they recruiting person. They came and they said, "Well, we really need anesthesia providers in the military." And I was like, "Okay, well, I'll go."
Okay. So now, I mean, on some level, I can relate to that. I ended up joining later than most people do. I was 27, 28 going through basic training and then in the Army. And then I went through federal officer candidate school. And at that point, when you get to OCS, the average age is a little bit older because you have people who were enlisted for a while that are, you know, becoming officers. So, but in basic training, I was definitely on the older side. And so, you know, at the time it might've seemed, as far as why did I join, it might've seemed like it came out of nowhere because we actually had just gotten married and then I joined the military. So it looks like I ran off got scared and joined the military. But a big reason why I did, this is the point I'm getting to, is that it was to do something, you know, that I thought was honorable and just to try to serve and give back. And it may sound like, you know, I'm gloating or, you know, but that really was it. I mean, it was not to pay off student loans or, you know, take some big bonus or something like that. It was to do something with purpose and to serve and to give. Certainly the military ended up benefiting me as well, but, yeah, it sounds like in some ways it was similar for you, where you felt like the country had given you so much and you wanted to give back. So then you were in the Navy, is that right?
Yeah, I was in the Navy. I came in as a lieutenant, and they gave me like a year something credit, so I quickly promoted to lieutenant commander. I did 8 years and then separated, but I had a blast.
That's awesome. And how long were you in the Navy for? You said 8 years?
Eight years.
Okay, got it. We'll have to edit that part out. okay, so then, and then what did you do after the Navy?
So I got out last year, August. We've been doing the apartment syndications and building up.
Wow, that's awesome. So yeah. So when do you sleep? what was that? I'm sorry, that cut out for a bit.
Oh, I'm not writing a book.
Oh yeah, then writing a book as well. Jeez.
Writing the book, that's when I sleep.
Oh, gotcha. Got it. So why real estate? And you know, we'll talk about that, and then we can go back to kind of the lessons that you started to touch on, lessons you've learned from the adversity and how you've applied those. But why, what got you into real estate?
So there I was, you know, doing my paying my bills, and after finishing a long shift at the hospital, and I got home, and I realized that, wow, the neighbor is paying mortgage, is paying my mortgage. So that was a nice feeling to have, you know. But then I was like, I was single then, and I was like, well, someday I won't be able to go to work, you know, age or anything could happen. I mean, I was mm-hmm. making good hospital, and mm-hmm. I was working really long hours, but I realized that if I don't go to work, I wasn't going to be making any money. I needed to be present to make that money, right?
Yeah.
And I realized that someday I might not, for whatever reason, be able to. And I saw the possibility of having the cash flow from investments, like putting the money to work, and then the money was making more money. So I figured if I do more of this, then I can this side, right? And so that really was how I got started thinking about it. And growing up in Mexico, the duplex theme wasn't a thing. You know, the we don't have duplex. We either have a house that is occupied by generations. First floor is my first kid, mm-hmm. you know. But there's really not that kind of investment. So mm-hmm. I was lucky that my agent offered me, because I told him, I'm not looking for something big. I want a house for me, something just me, and mm-hmm. something else that I can, you know, have a roommate. Mm-hmm. And use the concept of a duplex. So having that mentality, I thought, well, if I buy more duplexes, then I can then, you know, reduce my hours or not have to go to work. And mm-hmm. and looking into it. And when I deployed, I actually spent a lot of time learning on how does that real estate can actually build your wealth, and mm-hmm. and how you can scale it. And so that's when I learned about syndications and how you can do
syndications and stuff. Now, where did you deploy?
I was in Djibouti, Africa.
Okay. Gotcha. I wasn't expecting that answer. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and people say, how'd you have time to do that when you were deployed? And, you know, I was deployed to Iraq, and it's, even though you're busy a lot, you still have downtime, and you don't have, you know, 24/7, you're not busy with work. So what are you going to do with that downtime? And I actually started a second degree because it was like, all right, I don't know why not? and that was before remote learning was so popular, but 2006, you said, is when you got started, right? In real estate.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's, you know, the internet was obviously around, but I don't think Bigger Pockets was a thing, and, you know, you didn't have all these books and all these resources. So That's impressive, you know, because it wasn't until much later that we really went full on with, you know, because there's podcasts and things staring you in the face with how to learn and how to grow your network. So sounds like you did it more locally through your agent, and then started to scale from there. Is that fair to say?
Yes. When I came back, I have saved a lot of money from, you know, my income was non-taxable. And like you said, when you're deployed, mm-hmm. they provide all your meals, everything. There's nowhere you can spend the money. And all of that, when I came back, I was looking for more duplexes. And then, you know, a fourplex came along, and I was like, wait, my goal was to buy one home a year, one house a year. And then I was like, wow, I can buy four of them.
Right. Yeah. So you're, maybe slowly, but your mind started to expand as far as what was possible, and then it just grew from there. When did you get into kind of the bigger multifamily investing?
Along the way, I met my husband, and he has the same mindset of, you know, growing your network and putting your money to work. So we got along really well, he was still active. He did 26 and a half years, and he retired in October 2020.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's
congrats to him.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. So he that's when actually we transition to start selling our small multifamily and going into apartment syndications. We started passive investors so we can learn, and we also pay for mentorship. We pay for different masterminds and invested thousands of dollars to learn from mm-hmm. from the best people that they were doing. And we still are investing in ourselves and in the business. But that's what allows us to go transition from, you know, from $35 to $2,500.
That's incredible growth. And I'll be honest, I have gotten stingy with the, you know, the mastermind stuff. I just joined a mastermind, so I finally, you know, pulled the trigger. But I think a lot of people get hung up on that. And you can definitely waste money there if you're not careful with what groups you're getting into or who you're being associated with. But I mean, that's definitely been a theme already in the show, is just, you know, don't be afraid to invest in yourself, really, is what it is. You're plugging yourself into a network of people who have been doing this, and in where you're just absorbing knowledge and you're just learning and growing. And now you're exposed to all these other investors. I think that makes a lot of sense, and obviously it works, or else you wouldn't continue to spend money in that fashion, right?
Well, the return on investment. So most people is going to say, okay, well, I'm going to pay, I don't know, $25,000 on this mastermind, and that's mm-hmm. just one of. So, but then what do I get out of it? Well, you get out of it what you put, you know, amount, but not everybody does the same work. So it's the work that you do that is going to give you a return on investments. We go to events, we meet so many people, and then we meet them again the next year, and some of them are in action. And you know, so if you are paying for these investments, make sure that you're taking advantage of it in a way that you're getting your money back. And whatever that looks for you or your audience, right? I'm speaking to your audience, right?
No, you're right. Yeah.
So if you're putting your hard earned money into a mastermind or a course or a seminar, make sure that you're getting your money out. But that's going to be not only from the event, and you know, it's going to be a continuous work in reaching out to those connections that you met briefly. You know, see how you can add value to them, and you know, and that usually comes back around, and in both of you, both of the both sides. End up, you know, gaining something. So for us, it has been the source of a lot of partnerships, a lot of investors, a lot of just businesses that we create. And mm-hmm. The other thing is when it is a self-selecting process, right? Because you just said it earlier, not everybody pulls the trigger on, mm-hmm. So the people that are already invested in there and whatever, you know, so let's just say a seminar or a mastermind, mm-hmm. They're self-selecting. They're already saying, hey, I'm this serious. I am going mm-hmm. to, you know, invest this amount of money. So they're doing a part of the work for you already. So the rest of it is yourself, right? So we are very intentional on not only on being there, you know, mm-hmm. if we something, we're going to be sitting at the front row, asking questions, connecting with everybody and anyone that we can. You know, that's where the sweet spot is. So,
yeah, that's really good. And so it was, you said late 2020 when you really got started in the large multifamilies, right? The syndications and what you're doing now. Is that right?
October, 2020.
I mean, that's so, I think a lot of people would have been scared at that point, you know, with the pandemic and all that. And so, I mean, that's amazing. So at that point in October 2020, approximately how many doors did you have passively or actively?
So, and actually, and I'll say before May, which is when we learned about the COVID thing, right? When actually in my industry, I lost my contract, which I was going to a different hospital to work. Like I mentioned, my job, my primary job is anesthesia. Mm-hmm. So I do go to different hospitals. So my job canceled the contract and we saw how the severity of all this wave of the COVID was hitting. Mm-hmm. And we had at that point, we have 30, 31 rental units.
Okay.
And we sit down and did the numbers. How are we going to pay the mortgages? Are we able to pay, you know, because the banks were given forgiveness on the loans.
Yeah.
And we were grateful that we didn't have to use any of that. With 10 units being paying, they actually cover all the expenses. So at which point we actually, one of the wholesalers that we got a lot of properties from, came around and said, hey, you know, I have this fourplex that's very distressed and it's we're going to sell it for this much. I went and saw it, and it was very distressed. It was full of trash, full of fleas, and it was going to be a do it all completely. So we decided to buy it. And we, since nothing was happening, my husband was retired in October. I was just ending. I didn't know if I was going to go back to work. And we ended up doing all that renovation by ourselves. We did help the place. And we bought it for $65,000, I think it was. And we put about $120,000 in. Did all the insulation. We did everything. Like, it was from the studs up. We ended up selling it because somebody came and offered us healthy price. And Emma said, we were mudding. We were literally mudding and cleaning. And we were listening to the syndication seminar. And that's when we realized, you know what? We need to be more intentional. So the second day of the seminar, we got a hotel. We stayed there. We were in front of the TV being intentional. And that day is when we actually joined that mentorship program.
Okay.
And it was probably about 2 days after that. I guess that was $35, and about, I don't know, like that same week, we invested passively with a person that actually that I've been in contact for a podcast, and we invested passively there. So that was about, I don't know, it was probably about 200 units or so, and then we just continued to do the same thing, trusting that eventually, even though that wasn't giving us the cash flow now, and remember, you said it's a COVID year, so we were not going to be getting the money from the residents, but we still trusted that this was a good decision and a better decision to scale and to let go of the smaller unit. And so by the end of the year, we sold one of the units, we put all the money back into the syndications, and we did that 9 times. So in 9 months, we went from, you know, no apartments in our portfolio to 1,500, I think it was.
That's incredible. That's, I mean, wow. And this is really at the start of COVID, you know, as far as, you know, maybe it started before that, but in March, April, 2020, until now, you've grown from 30 to 35 rental units, somewhere in there, to, what'd you say? 2,500
yes.
passive and active, doors. That's amazing. And so, and you keep putting, you know, the profits and your own physical energy and sweat equity into the business, it sounds like. So you've just grown exponentially. That's fantastic. So before we get to kind of a rapid fire set of questions that I didn't prep you for, what would you say as far as, you know, looking back at the adversity that you have faced, and of course you will continue to face adversity. We don't act like all of your adversity or your scarcity is 100% gone and now you only live in abundance. We don't pretend like that's, you know, an overnight thing or, but what would you say? I mean, you're definitely living in financial abundance, certainly relative to where where you were. So what would you say are some of the lessons you've learned as far as kind of, you know, moving toward abundance?
I would say the first one is to be grateful and appreciative for what we have, because just when we think that the worst is happening, there's always something worse. So we be grateful for not having the other worst, right?
Mm-hmm.
And choosing intentionally focus on what we have, like being able to dream big, you know, to have a dream, you know, there, at least you have the clarity to have a dream, you know, and that sometimes is the only thing that you have, and that's the only thing that you have to propel yourself. So definitely being grateful for what we have. And the other thing is that what I would say, what differentiates the person that stays in the scarcity from the person to abundance is the person that takes the action. You know, you have to be intentional what actions we take. And that together with setting your goals, it's you're lining up the map, and you're pretty much giving your brain a path that it needs to follow. So, you know, being grateful, being intentional and taking action, and having your goals.
Those are very good. Yeah. Cause you hear this debate, and I actually heard a little bit of this yesterday on a short podcast, as far as you have kind of the think and grow rich crowd who, you know, if you're taking that extreme on the extreme, it's all, I just have to think, I don't have to do anything. I just have to dream and that it'll all magically happen. No, you do need to roll up your sleeves and not be afraid to, you know, do the full rehab yourself. But if you don't actually dream and plan and think, and you only take action, then you're going to be getting yourself nowhere. You're headed in the wrong direction. So like you said, you need to be intentional about it. You need both. So that's really good. I don't have much to add there. Be intentional, dream big, take action, and be grateful was the first one you said. So, all right. A few more rapid fire questions here. What do people misunderstand about you?
Because of my accent. Just kidding.
Yeah. They misunderstand what I'm saying.
I think that probably that I'm like all the time go-getter, and that's not true, because sometimes I allow myself to say, you know, I'm going to take it easy today, you know, and I do have those times where, you know, we just, you know, just have fun and live life. So I think that people ask me, when do you sleep? Well, I do sleep.
Right. Gotcha. Yep. That's good. Looking back, what would you say is one of your regrets or failures, or, you know, however you want to frame that, but something that you would change or do differently?
I mean, there's what after the fact, right? We always say, well, maybe I should have done that. I should have done that. And sometimes it's harder to like put it in words, especially when you're asked in front of a stranger.
Sure.
But I think that definitely spending more time with family. And that's always going to be like, man, I should have, and you know, I should book the trip, especially, you know, my family being in Mexico. Now, you know, I'm married and my side of the family here, which is, makes it easy. It's always that time, you know, there were years that I didn't have a means to go. Like I have no money. If I stop working, I couldn't afford. Right. So, definitely more time with family than,
Yeah, that's good. If you could go back and give your 18-year-old self advice, what would it be?
I would say, I would say just to not to worry too much about what other people's labels that they stamp on you. You know, we hear something and we kind of take that to heart. We believe it, you know, and then we fit in it ourselves. So I would say definitely, you know, have your voices be stronger than others in a way that impact you instead of listening to those messages.
Mm-hmm. That's good. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who would it be?
Wow. Mother Teresa.
Okay. Any, I think I almost don't have to ask why, but why would it be her?
I think every word that she spoke is powerful. And even if it's like 2-3 minutes that I get to just absorb her, you know, I just see her as a given person, as a very wise person, you know, So yeah, just to kind of be there. And I feel like it, with her words, she just hugs you and like, you know, fixes you.
So. Yeah, you're definitely, we'd all be just better off if we spent 5 minutes with her. I agree. How about in your business? What's a challenge that you're facing today?
So we grew a little too fast, and it's not a bad thing. It's a challenging thing because when you're in a growing phase, you really are just in survival phase, right? So you know, we started hiring now people who are hiring our team, but we still have to continue going. So it's been challenging to like train or delegate when you are still trying to learn it. So we have hired an amazing team, but it still is taking us time to develop. But we'd rather do it now than that. Hopefully, we'll grow faster instead of. We see very often in the syndication world that there's this very successful people. They've been doing it for 10, 20 years, and they're just now hiring one assistant. They still ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're that very, very early. And even though it's an investment in the business, you know, the goal is to continue to grow and not have this stagger, you know, hitting the ceiling every so often or every so many years.
Yeah. Is it a virtual assistant or how have you been hiring?
We actually have, in the state, we have a physical person. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of virtual assistants. And, gotcha. And the goal is to have at least another person in the state. Yeah.
Got it. And how do you and your husband divide up roles?
He's more of the numbers person. He's the underwriter. He does a lot of the market analysis. I do a lot of the chit-chatting and yeah. relations with investors and a lot of admin. We kind of naturally, you know, follow what feels good and mm-hmm. it's more helpful in the business.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, I've experienced that myself. As far as well, I've worked with my spouse in real estate as well. But even with other business partners, kind of just naturally gravitate to certain things, even if it's not super well defined up front, and either it works or it doesn't. gotcha. So, what is one piece of advice you'd give to someone just starting out in real estate?
Find mentorship and find the mentorship from the people. So find the person that is doing it on a daily basis. Like in the market that we are, you know, if we are not buying an apartment, we are among people that are doing that every single day, because, you know, the process of buying it might take you three to five months. And if you take your pulse of the market is changing so quickly. So find mentorship and be in a community that are doing what you want to do.
Got it. That's good. All right. What's a movie that you would recommend?
Do you ever
watch any movies?
No, right?
Or how about if you want to switch it to a book other than your own?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I really like the Millionaire Next Door.
Yeah, the book. So, yeah. I'm trying to think because there's Millionaire Real Estate Invest. Oh, Millionaire Next Door. Got it. That's the one where school teachers might be a millionaire and you don't know it, right?
Yeah, and it takes you to the process of you know, why and how they got into being a millionaire by the habits that they have, and how they live their life, you know. And it's not that you have to be flashy and, you know, leave it all there because you have some money. And if you put it in perspective, really being a millionaire these days, so
it's
$1 million, like you buy a house, people has a house that is valued $1 million just because the market went up, right? If you compare, and that book actually was written to be a millionaire, then that was
impressive.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, as we start to wrap up here, what's one question that you wish I'd asked that I haven't asked? One topic you'd like to address that we didn't touch on?
I mean, we kind of visited all the basic.
so, I've been thorough. I've been. Okay. Got it. Okay. Do you listen to any podcasts? Do you ever listen to any other podcasts that you could recommend?
Yes, I like the real estate investment. I visit, you know, the different topics. I like that because they, you know, they kind of wrap up the topics for you. And then if I like a specific a person, and then I go and follow. But I kind of bounce back and forth in different podcasts.
Right. Yeah, I do the same thing. Okay. That's awesome. I think this has been really good. Your story and your book, you know, they fit perfectly with the theme of my show and, you know, from scarcity to abundance. And it's one of those things where it's just, I think our listeners are going to benefit greatly by hearing your story. And I mean, you didn't know English at 23 and you moved to the US and now you're an author. And you have 2,500, you know, doors, rental properties or rental units, passively and actively. I mean, and you're just the last 3 years, 2 years, you've just blown up. So it's you and your husband have just, it's incredible growth. And just the mindset, the abundance mindset, being grateful, being intentional, taking action, and also I don't want to forget that you repeatedly talked about kind of serving others and making your tenants, you know, serving your tenants and making things a win-win and improving communities along the way. So it's not like it's a cutthroat mentality where it's, you know, all about you and your husband making as much cash as possible. It's also serving others. So do you have anything to add to those kind of final thoughts?
I actually do want to add that when you mentioned giving back, we have a mission to do medical missions. I've been doing medical missions to different countries, but I've never done one to Mexico. And one of the things that when I went and saw my grandma for the last time, she was in so much pain, and she stopped living life because she was in so much pain from her arthritis. And I was able to inject local anesthetic in her knees, and immediately, like 3 minutes later, she's like, wow, it doesn't hurt anymore. and she asked me in the middle of her, you know, just kind of getting out of her own pain. And she asked me if I could do the same thing for her friends and her community, because she lived in that community for 104 years. So that was her only worry. If I can help them with what I have. And I promised her that I will. And part of, like, actually the book, I wrote it for waking up that theme, and all the profits from that book and other materials that we share in the second book are to be dedicated to bring medical missions. Our first one is scheduled to be June 2025. We are trying to do it earlier than that if possible, but that is like what I told you, set your goals. That's our goal. That's June to 2025. And hopefully before, but all of this, what we do with the passive income and the you know, the I guess the goal is to be able to give back, and hopefully more than one mission. We'll do several, and we are going to open it to do a community of wellness outreaches. So we'll be like help build houses, improve the community.
Good. That's great. I actually skipped over how do you like to serve others, because we are, you know, partially because we're running a little short on time, but it's also because I felt like you'd already shown that. But I'm really glad you threw that in there, because that is, you know, that's a lot. That's, you clearly are giving back and serving. That's impressive. So June 2025 is the goal. Yeah. Gotcha. That's to Mexico.
Yes.
Got it. Awesome. Okay. Where can our listeners find you online? I know you're out there, what websites or social media channels would you like to highlight?
But Instagram, I am there. My name will pop, but the Millionaire, the Immigrant Millionaire. But you can just Google my name, and same thing for Facebook and LinkedIn.
Yep. Just you want to spell your name for the listeners who are only listening and not watching this?
Right. It's M A R I C E L A, and the last name is S O B as in Bravo, E R A N as in Nancy, E-S.
Fantastic. And your business is Upplex, UPplex. Great. This has been very good, Marisela. I really appreciate you joining us. It's been, we've covered a lot from the human angle and all the poverty and the adversity that you faced, and now the growth you are continuing to experience from a financial and social standpoint. And just like I said, this your story really fits very well with my show. So I know our listeners are going to get a lot of value from this. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And to our listeners out there, please do give us a 5-star rating and review. My website is labradorlending.com. You can check out what we have going on with different offerings that we have for passive investors. And we do have resources for active mortgage note investors if you want to learn more about that. So please check that out as well. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for spending your most valuable resource with us, your time. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and fellow podcast listeners. One entrepreneur at a time, we can change the world. See you next time.
Hey there, it's Jamie Bateman. Ever felt boxed in by life's challenges? Dive into my new book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, available now on Amazon. From a former bank robber's redemption to a young entrepreneur's victory over hurdles, these stories are not just inspiration. They're the roadmaps to your transformation. Whether for you or as a powerful gift to friends and family, especially those who might not tune into podcasts, this book is a beacon to a life of abundance. Ignite that inner fire and set your course to the life you've imagined. Purchase yours today on Amazon and light the path for someone you love.